Welcome.
Hello once again, everybody, and thank you for joining me here on this Monday, December 11th edition of Bang the Book Radio. My name is Adam Burke, your host for the next hour and 20, hour and a half or so, as we go over all kinds of things in the world of sports from a betting focus. Happy to have you with me as we kick off a new week here on Bang the Book Radio. Joe Everett will be the first guest to join me here today from NFL Draft Bible for our NFL Week in Review and Monday Night Football Preview, talking, of course, Patriots-Dolphins here with the Monday Nighter, then also taking a look back at Week 14 in the NFL, including that awful Carson Wentz injury. Second half of today's show, Kyle Hunter from huntersportspicks.com joins us for our college football first look and handicapping the Hardwood Hybrid segment. We're going to talk college football and college basketball there, looking at the first round of bowl games coming up here on Saturday, then also looking at a bunch of stuff in the college basketball betting market. Before we get into that, a couple things I want to bring to your attention here. Over at bangthebook.com right now, we've got tons of great stuff going on. All of the bowl games have been previewed except for the Celebration Bowl, which doesn't have a line out for it yet. That one between the SWAC and MEAC, North Carolina A&T, takes on Grambling. Got that preview mostly written up, just waiting on a line for that one. But all of the FBS bowl games have been previewed over there at bangthebook.com, from the December 16th games to the New Year's Day games. So all of those picks and previews up there. We've got one article that's got a chart that shows links to all the bowl games. Then also, of course, you can find those individually as well. So very excited to have all of those done here with a lot of lead time for our readers and our Bang the Book Radio listeners. Make sure you're checking out Parker Michaels' daily NHL picks. Lots of great stuff with those. My NBA and NHL situational betting articles are posted over there at bangthebook.com for this week. Lots of good opportunities in both of those leagues. Of course, our free contest, you just sign up with an email address. We'll send you a newsletter every day giving you some idea of what's going on over at the site. But you can sign up and play those free contests. Daily Streaker, monthly pick of the day, top monthly win percentage, top ROI, top number of units won. Cash prizes available for those. Finally, check out all of our sportsbook reviews over at bangthebook.com. Exclusive promo codes for all of the different outlets that are over there. Check those out here in the month of December. You know, you're out shopping for the holidays. You're out doing this and that. You know, maybe kids want to go out and play in the snow or whatever the case may be. You may have a hard time getting some of the lines that are available out there. The more outs you have, the better off you're going to be. So if you check out that sportsbook review section, find that book that works best for you. Sign up over there. Have 2, 3, 4, 5 outlets at your disposal. It's only going to help you here in the month of December with so much going on to pick off some of the best lines that are up there. Well, two guests coming your way here on this Monday edition of Bang the Book Radio. The first, Mr. Joe Everett from NFL Draft Bible. Joe, how's it going today, man?
It's going great, man. That football weekend was excellent. The FCS tournament, good games. The snow game for Army-Navy. And a legendary snow game in Buffalo. I mean, so I had the under in that game too, but just watching that weather, watching them try and clear the field, the madness, I don't know about you, but I look forward to games like that, man.
Yeah, I think so too. And apologies to our listeners here, we're having a little bit of a sound issue. Joe, I may have you call back in here and see if we can get that thing squared away. And, you know, I've picked up all that new equipment that I was talking about on last week's show. Of course, I'm missing one adapter that I realized late last night. So I will be able to pick that up here today and hopefully be able to have a little bit of a better broadcast for you as we go forward here on Bang the Book Radio. So looking forward to really digging into that stuff and taking a look around and seeing if I can, do some different things here, a little bit of higher quality audio editing software and that type of thing. So I am hoping to enhance your Bang the Book listening experience here in the very near future. But Joe, good to have you back on the line here. And yeah, you know, it was nice to see a good NFL weekend. And we kind of talked about that a little bit last week in our super contest segment, in that, you know, we had a lot of games with close lines here. And of course, you know, some people with that Philadelphia and the Rams game there in the second half kind of getting screwed over a little bit, especially the Rams second half bettors and the Rams teasers players. But yeah, it was a good weekend overall of football, and the league needed that because this has been a challenging season to watch. There have been a lot of blowouts or a lot of bad teams, as we talked about, lots of key injuries. The league needs this here with all this playoff drama over the next four weeks of the season.
Yeah, this would definitely help if anyone's complaining about ratings. I mean, the injuries, sure, but those were some good games. The elements, the weather, the excitement, the high scores. I mean, some really high scoring games in there mixed in. But yeah, that's the timing couldn't be better. And yeah, I just, you know, for people that may complain about the low score in that Buffalo Colts game, that was just fun to watch. I love elements like that. I always look forward to playing in the snow when I was in high school, and only got to do it once. But yeah, cherish that.
Yeah, and it makes for a lot of fun, too. I mean, it adds a lot of intrigue to a game that otherwise wouldn't have had any, because no one cares about that Indianapolis-Buffalo game, especially with Tyrod Taylor out of the equation. And, you know, it adds a little bit of flavor, and that is something that the NFL, you know, does desperately need here. And before we get into this Monday Night Football game, you know, let's talk about a big-time negative from the weekend. This Tom Savage episode with the Houston Texans. I mean, I don't know what's going on here with this supposed independent, you know, body neurologist or whatever else that's going on, but how can you allow that guy to keep playing after that injury? You know, and that's kind of something that, you know, I think overshadows what was a good football weekend. You know, we saw a very competitive game between Minnesota and Carolina. The Rams and Eagles game was fantastic, except for the Carson Wentz injury. Seattle and Jacksonville was a really good game up until all the BS that happened at the end of that one. You know, you head into this, into the early part of this week here, and what are people talking about, Joe? They're talking about the Tom Savage thing, and they're talking about the fight at the end of the Seahawks-Jaguars game. The optics of the NFL right now are just so bad.
Well, yeah, there is some bad to that. And the Tom Savage, I mean, I would, anyone who wants to blame Bill O'Brien or any of the coaches, I mean, that's up to the analysts upstairs. You've got a team, a quality control team, not only on your challenges, but your play, who may or may not be dogging it, who may or may not be injured, and who may be covering up a concussion. So, yeah, I mean, someone upstairs is definitely to blame for that. And I mean, if you know, someone wants to paint Bill O'Brien in a bad light there, I think he's got a lot going on, like tons of fish to fry in the pot for him. I don't think he can be, you know, overseeing every last bit of it. So that's one thing I'd, you know, pull a little blame off him, but definitely what the management, how that team's being run upstairs. I think that's where you really have to point some fingers at. And that as a team, I wouldn't be surprised at some point in this week they come out with a statement, or, you know, maybe a self-imposed fine, but something's got to be said upstairs from Texans management, because yeah, that was a bad scene. Just seeing Tom shake like that, that's, you don't want to see any player like that, and then much less coming back in the game, just getting there. That was definitely one of the worst parts, much less that Jags and Seahawks game that we'll get into.
Yeah, I kind of wonder, you know, I mean, we have probably the best weekend of football that we've had all season long in the NFL. And the fact that it's the two negatives that everybody's talking about out there in the mainstream media, really the three. I mean, if you include the Carson Wentz injury, which, you know, certainly doesn't have anything to do with the bad optics of the NFL right now. But still, you know, those are the three stories that are dominating the headlines here after we had such a fine, exciting week of football. And, you know, I mean, it's not like the NFL is in danger or anything like that, but it does kind of make me wonder, you know, long term about this league. You know, I sort of feel like my generation, the 35 and under type generation, I don't know if they're gravitating away from football, but it just seems like one of those things where I do kind of wonder about, you know, the long-term health of the NFL, and obviously legalization, which is coming down the pike. And, you know, we should have a New Jersey decision here over the next 4, 5, 6 months or so, you know, that would help, but it's such an interesting thing for me. And I know that neither one of us is really qualified to talk about it at length, but it was just something I wanted to pick your brain about a little bit here, you know, and see what your thoughts were on it. But let's go ahead and get into this Monday Night Football game here. New England takes on Miami. New England, a 10.5 or 11-point favorite out there, depending on where you look. Bookmaker down to 10.5. BetOnline just lighting up, going down to 10.5 here as well. Most of the market's still sitting on 11. These two teams just played a little bit ago. New England covered as a 16.5-point favorite at home, won that game by 18. But man, double digits on Monday Night Football for a home team looks real attractive, doesn't it, Joe?
I'm sure it does, but, you know, there's some of those general rules I kind of operate and stand by. I just don't want to stand in front of that train that's known as Tom Brady and Bill Belichick. And like you said, we've seen this movie before. I just I've got it playing right now. We're at the end of the fourth quarter. The one touchdown Miami has is I think a little bit of a fluke. Were it not for just idiotic snap, bad turnover. Rashad Jones on a hustle play just takes that back for a six. So, I don't know. Only 2 weeks ago, I think it's just going to be a little bit of the same. Sure, no Gronkowski, but there's going to be a lot of Deion Lewis, who's having a great season, and then Burkhead, he's doing well. But Lewis is just so Kevin Falk 2.0. He's even wearing that old 33, which just makes it look so reminiscent. But Chris Hogan, I think, is the benefactor from Gronkowski being out. I know he doesn't play tight end, but that's a guy that's going to run a lot of those seam beaters, just the bang eights. Like, he'll get open on those. So he'll get open underneath. I think he's been limited in practice with that shoulder, but he should be a full go. He's probable for the game. And that's where, I don't know, if I can get a little bit of a player prop, I suppose I wouldn't mind that one. But Josh McDaniels is going to scheme him to death here. Tom Brady's still playing. The only worry, if I'm a Patriots backer, I guess Marcus Cannon's out, right tackle, but they'll make some glue there where Dante Scarnecchia is going to figure that out. So it's just on Miami's offensive side, I'd say, Kenyon Drake. Unfortunately, Damian Williams is not going to play. I think that's going to hurt him more than people be willing to admit, because just getting that spell for Drake is so valuable in their scheme. They're really heavily on the run there. Sure, Jarvis Landry moves the chains in the possession game, but it's basically a lot of talent at wide receiver and not a whole lot of that outside of it in Miami. It's just I think Devontae Parker, that's a guy who might make the difference here for the Dolphins. If I was the Dolphins, I'd look to take advantage of John Jones or Stephon Gilmore. I wouldn't try Malcolm Butler, at least not too many times before he makes you pay. So, yeah, Parker might be the difference maker there. If Kenyon Drake goes off, then the Dolphins definitely have a chance, but I don't see it happening. But if you're a Dolphins believer, I mean, if you're making that case, there is one advantage there. Kyle Van Noy is just not going to play. And Landon Roberts, one of their standbys, is in there, but he's not the same type of leader, coach on the field that Kyle Van Noy is. So some of the underneath stuff, like if they throw a lot to Kenyon Drake, he could have a big receiving day. But still, I'm just I don't see how the Patriots come away not covering this number. I mean, they're playing well. It's just a game I think they covered with ease last time out, just for good reason. And even though they don't have Gronkowski, I don't care, though. Brandon Cooks them to death. Danny Amendola will get out there. Whatever it takes, I think the Patriots run away with it.
I mean, I think that you do have some compelling betting angles here to play Miami. One of them is, I mean, for New England here, you know, they still have to keep pace with the Pittsburgh Steelers, which obviously is a concern for them, especially with Pittsburgh having that win last night against Baltimore. But those two teams play next week at Heinz Field. So this is a massive look-ahead spot here for New England. And you generally don't think that in division games, because the Patriots have been so good on Bill Belichick's watch within the division. But again, this is a team that they just beat 35-17 as a 16.5-point favorite. Just blew out the Bills on the road by 20. So for New England, this could be a win-and-get-out type of game. They may not be too worried about going out there and covering the number. Now, of course, they are good enough to go out there and cover the number, even if they're not trying. But that look-ahead factor to that Steelers game is a pretty big deal in my mind, largely because you have a New England team here that really has nothing else to prove this season. You know, Tom Brady looks phenomenal in his age 40 season. And they're doing everything right with the running backs. Brandon Cooks has been a very nice addition. So, you know, maybe the defense has a little bit of a chip on its shoulder still. But even then, I mean, this is a defense that hasn't given up more than, 17 points since that game against Carolina where they gave up 33. They gave up 14, 17, 7, 13, 16, 8, 17, and 3. So Matt Patricia's got this defense going in the right direction. I think maybe the way that you'd want to look at this game is to probably take a look at the under more so than the side. Total of 48 for this one. You know, I just don't think that New England's going to have that let's go out there and beat the piss out of this team type of instinct. I think they're going to play defense. I think they're going to try to keep Tom Brady upright and not let him get hit with that huge game coming up here against Pittsburgh. Could be a little bit of a watered-down conservative game plan. So, you know, maybe that does lend itself to taking the points with Miami, but I think I'd feel more comfortable about the under because this New England defense, you know, has looked so much better here over the last several weeks. But Joe, let me ask you about this for Miami. You know, Jarvis Landry, 80 catches on 122 targets, but only 8.7 yards per catch. You've got Kenny Stills. You've got a big-bodied guy, Devontae Parker, with a lot of skill. You've got a good matchup advantage tight end in Julius Thomas. Why can't this Miami offense get going? Is it a Jay Cutler thing? Is it a scheme thing with Adam Gase? I mean, they've got talent, even with Jay Ajayi traded.
It's turnovers at the worst times. And, you know, switching up quarterbacks hasn't helped. That last game with Matt Moore, they drove the ball. They had the running game going, and he turns it right over in the red zone. Jay Cutler, I think the listeners well know his turnover foibles, but there still is, as you mentioned, like if you want to look for that angle of Miami, I think Trey Flowers also out for New England, who did play in the last game. That's their best pass rusher, unequivocally. Dietrich Weiss also it's questionable for this game, so they will have some time to throw. It's like if it's Jay, if whoever it is back there, I know, but unfortunately, it's just that's the end result. Sometimes it's like they're good for about five out of those six snaps, and then that one out of six, it may be a mistake, but it somehow has turned into that costly mistake. And I think the name you brought up, though, that's pretty interesting, though, Julius Thomas has, you know, had a game or two there where he's fired up as of late, and with Van Noy out with a little extra time, he might be able to get free on some passes. So, yeah, there's ways Miami could score. I'm not ruling that out. But it's hard to imagine with the late series. And even with Flowers out in that last game, would they hold Buffalo to three? And Van Noy didn't play as well. So it's this is still just a well-coached defense. I don't think you have to say what they're doing on offense. It's just one of those games I might be sitting out tonight.
Yeah, I mean, I think sitting out is a viable possibility. I mean, like I said, I do kind of like the under in this spot. So if you wanted to tease Miami up, you know, you are kind of losing a little bit of value here now with some of those 11s going down to 10.5. But you can get, you know, a plus 17 and kind of tease the under up there at 54.5 range. Maybe that would be the way to look to go if you're dying for some action here. Because it's not a great college basketball night. You know, relatively small cards in the NBA and the NHL. So if you are looking for a little bit of action tonight, maybe a teaser of Miami in the under would be something you could do, or also New England in the under would be something that you could consider as well, especially with New England. You know, if this line continues to come down, of course. I mean, if you tease from 10.5 to 4.5, you're grabbing six, you're grabbing seven, you know, not the most significant of numbers there from a teaser standpoint. So, again, I mean, just be smart with it. Don't do too much with this game, I wouldn't think, because you also kind of have to wonder, like I said, you know, if New England's up 17-3, 21-3 at halftime, something like that, what do they look like in the second half? Knowing that Pittsburgh game is on deck, watching what happened to Carson Wentz yesterday in a game that was still competitive, you know, you kind of got to wonder about that a little bit too. So, you know, some of these teams can get a little bit gun-shy when they see something like that. It's kind of, you know, that Carson Wentz thing, I guess we'll go ahead and transition to that. I mean, in one play, shook up every dynamic in the NFC.
Yeah, I can't. It's really unfortunate, too, because he's diving for a touchdown that ended up not counting on a holding play, I believe. I don't know if it was Lane Johnson or what, but this is still a good squad. And, you know, rock-solid trio receivers, love how Aguilar's playing, and not to get down a rabbit hole, but how about all those USC receivers playing out of their minds? Aguilar, Robert Woods, Marquise Lee, all these Lane Kiffin recruits enjoying the best years of their careers. No coincidence, Lane's rocking at FAU, but a whole nother side story. I think Philly's still that pass rush, the run defense, some questionable corner play, but we talked about it on shows past. Do you want to go with teams and bet on them that have great depth? The roster makeup is sound. And so this, I think, is still just a tough team to beat. What they lose is that chicken salad. The plays Carson Wentz would just scramble, make something out of nothing. That's unfortunate because the third and long, the third and anything, so you knew you had a chance because Wentzylvania was back there to pull a rabbit out of his hat. So that, unfortunately, changes that just I don't know, sharp edge that they had, those fangs that this monster had. But still, I think, you know, it took a few hits there that that reminded me, I think, I guess the worry here for Carson that it doesn't change his game, because it was such a great thing to watch, the way he scrambled, the way he ran. Watching Robert Griffin III when he took that hit from Haladi Nada right on the knee, and boy, was he never the same to that. It's just, that's my worry just on Wentz's side. But Nick Foles, sure, he was slow to react on some reads. He hasn't seen some live bullets in a long time. And, you know, time and passes up was a bit of an issue. And he's not the scrambler, but I still think this is a well-coached team. This basically is set up for Doug Peterson's finest hour right here. So I think, sure, it's a short week. They're up for their third road trip. But fortunate for them, it's just the Giants. They've got a terrible Oakland team on deck. I don't trust the G-men without Odell Beckham, so this is still an Eagles team. I mean, you know, I'm not picking up stakes and taking my tent down the road here. I think I'm still a Philly backer and still looking for opportunities. Nick Foles, capable quarterback, and it's unfortunate for Wentz and everything he's put into what should be an MVP season for him. But man, I'm here to tell you, Adam, the Eagles are still a great team.
Yeah, they really are. And like you said, you talk about depth and you talk about their ability to play defense, and those things are very, very important for them. And Jim Schwartz has just done such a fine job with this defense that they're not a ruined team. I mean, they are a team that obviously, you know, has a much tougher road now to get through the NFC playoffs. And you know, I mean, I'm not even really too much worried about how they finish out the regular season. Right now, it's all about figuring out what parts of the playbook are going to be most comfortable for Nick Foles. And I think you kind of see it here a little bit this week with the line opening Philadelphia -8 at bookmaker. Now it's up to 9 pretty much across the market. Is that, you know, I don't think that the sharper segments of the betting market are all that worried about this Philadelphia team because of that defense. They have a lot of different options to run the football. Doug Peterson can be a creative play caller if he needs to be, and also Frank Reich as well. But one of the things I saw on Twitter that really stood out to me a little bit here is that the Eagles have run, I think it was 130 RPOs, the run pass option that a lot of college offenses have been using, you know, with a lot of success here recently. That seems like the type of thing that can work for Nick Foles, because Nick Foles is still a mobile guy. I mean, you look back to what he did at Arizona, and he was a guy that, you know, did throw on the run quite a bit, did scramble quite a bit, kept a lot of plays alive with his legs. And if you give him those RPOs, then, you know, he's going to be getting those linebackers moving around. It's a matter of those Eagles receivers who, as you said, have played really well. Jeffrey, Aguilar, you know, Zach Ertz, when they get him back, you know, those guys, just a matter of them getting open. And how long can you cover those guys? You know, as long as the Eagles are able to move some pockets around, yeah, they got to change the playbook around a little bit to help out Nick Foles. But still, I think the scheme that they run, the way that they've had so many of those RPOs, where as long as Nick Foles is making the right routes, and let's keep in mind here, the biggest problem for Carson Wentz last year was reading defenses. He couldn't do it. You know, he did wear down physically. He was having a hard time reading defenses. He was throwing into some bad spots, throwing some picks there in the middle part of the season. He improved on that this year. Nick Foles is right there in that same quarterback room with Carson Wentz. So while I wouldn't touch the Eagles here at this point, I wouldn't touch them this week, laying a big number on the road against the Giants, I don't think that this is a ruined team. And maybe we get some value from a future standpoint on them, but I truly trust a guy like Doug Peterson to come up with what he needs to do so that Foles can have success.
Oh, yeah, this recipe will work. And, you know, they'll also, like you mentioned, change it up a little bit, shorten the game, put it on Jim Schwartz and that defense. And I think you hit it there. It's the RPOs. They ran those all the time at Arizona. So I think that you don't have to eliminate that from the book. And this guy knows how to read defenses. So, yeah, it's say what you want about this Giants game coming up, but I'm still keeping the Eagles in my back pocket, and them just finishing out that game just last night shows me a lot just about their toughness as a core. And, yeah, just that's thank you for bringing up Frank Wright, too. I mean, that's just another guy, like not only a deep team, but even behind Peterson, Schwartz, Wright. There's a lot of, you know, good coaches on the staff that aren't going to let close games get away from them.
All right, one team I know you wanted to talk about here is the Tennessee Titans, and that was not a good look for them against the Arizona Cardinals here this past weekend. It was a little bit surprising to see them as such a clear road favorite in Arizona, as a field goal favorite. We did see some 2.5s around kickoff there. Tennessee, a lone touchdown in the second quarter, couldn't muster anything otherwise. They're down to 8-5. They're still in a position to make the playoffs right now with the AFC being what it is. Of course, Jacksonville gets that big win over Seattle, my only loss in the Super Contest, but that propels Jacksonville to the 3-line. Tennessee sitting here on the 5-line. You really didn't like what you saw from the Titans this past weekend.
Well, and this is one of those teams that fooled me early. I'm sorry to the listeners, and just, you know, I'm not afraid to make a mistake because there's plenty more where that came from. But, yeah, they should be auto-fade for the rest of the year. Exotic smash mouth. I don't know where that went. The Cardinals with their third-string quarterback just beat you. So drafting Corey Davis in the first round's all well and good because you want to surround Mariota with talent, but I'm not sold he can do anything with it just yet. I mean, I'm not going to rule him out for the future, but where's the coaching? Mularkey's supposed to develop quarterbacks. I don't see any development. They didn't block anybody, which is the biggest atrocity because they're supposed to have this great offensive line, and it's just they're not playing like Pro Bowlers. And they're just not on the same page on more than a few routes I saw from this game. And, you know, hey, credit to Cardinals, but Blaine Gabbert's, you know, looking good, and good job on them. But right now I still think team speed's a big issue. Adoree Jackson's unequivocally their fastest player. That's why they're using him so much on offense. But that's even a detriment. On fourth down, they're throwing to Adoree Jackson against Honey Badger. I don't understand how a rookie cornerback is a good matchup against the Badger, but be that as it may, that's Mariota's decision. And really, outside of Delonte Walker, they don't have any sort of go-to identity on offense. I mean, if you take away those long Derrick Henry runs in all their games, what do they have? What numbers have they covered? This whole makeup right now, it's just it's unfortunately – man, even my boy Corey Davis, I know he's been hurt, but I just haven't seen it from the Western Michigan product. I know it's there, hoping he has a monster season two and just stays healthy, but I'm seeing Mariota taking a step back. I'm not convinced where they are where they need to be, and I'm just looking at these games coming up. At San Francisco with my boy Jimmy G, they host the Rams. They finish up against a pretty mean Jags team. Mean in a lot of ways. I'm fading this team the rest of the way out. If they make the playoffs and prove me wrong by some crazy tiebreaker, I'll fade them in the postseason as well. But, like, yeah, there's no reason anybody should have a Tennessee ticket right now. Not anytime soon. Not until next season.
Well, and it's very interesting to look at the lines here for Week 15 in the sense that you had San Francisco knock off the Bears last week. Then they went on the road here again against Houston. Tennessee favored last week against Arizona on the road, now a dog to San Francisco on the road. So, yeah, it's back-to-back road games for Tennessee. You know, I haven't actually looked to see if they're staying out on the West Coast. I imagine that they are. I haven't actually checked that yet here this morning. But, I mean, that kind of illustrates it right there. You know, you look for these overreactions. You look for buy points and sell points in the NFL. And it is very clear to me that the market right now wants to sell Tennessee, wants to buy San Francisco. Now, the contrarian in me and the past me in the NFL would think to myself, okay, maybe now is the time to come back on Tennessee. But everything you just outlined right there, it's just a mess. And I think that, you know, one of the things that we're kind of seeing here, we talked a lot about Jameis Winston and the hiring of Dirk Cotter and of Todd Monken down there at Tampa Bay. I think if you hire a coach and an offensive coordinator and get the quarterback that he wants, like Kyle Shanahan with Jimmy Garoppolo, like Doug Peterson with Carson Wentz, that's a much better formula than drafting a guy with a previous regime and then trying to, you know, cater to or placate that guy, like what Tampa Bay did with Jameis Winston. You know, we talked about it last week. Jameis Winston got to handpick who he wanted to be there. You know, they asked him and said, you know, who's going to help you the most with your development? He isolated these guys. With Tennessee, they kind of did the same thing here with Mularkey in that, you know, was Mike Mularkey really qualified to be the head coach of this team? Maybe, but they did it from a developmental standpoint for Marcus Mariota. It hasn't really worked out. Mariota doesn't look any better than he did when he first came out. So I think that's kind of a thing that we may see in the NFL here. And, you know, I kind of worry about that with the Cleveland Browns and the, you know, disaster that their front office is. You know, you are better to have the front office in place and then handpick the quarterback as opposed to get the quarterback and then figure it out. Now, you know, the Browns, we'll see if they do it correctly, and it certainly looks like they're going to with the Dorsey hire after you and I beat them up on the show, and then like 4 hours later, they fired Sashi Brown and changed things around there in the front office. But this Tennessee team, I mean, there needs to be some soul searching with this team. I also don't think Terry Rubisky is the right guy to run this Mariota offense. They need somebody who's going to do the RPO type thing, like what Philadelphia is doing to help out Carson Wentz. But I don't know. I mean, this is a defense that needs a lot of work. It's a power running game that they've gotten away from it the last few weeks. There's really not a whole lot to like about Tennessee, and I know that's hard to say with an 8-5 team, but I stock is trending down in them for sure.
Oh, yeah. And Terry Rubisky, he's an overrated wide receivers coach, in my opinion. He's a great position coach, but offensive coordinator may be asking a bit much. And, yeah, it's a hard sell to, like, even going forward, fix this QB for me, new coach. There's few exceptions to where that actually works. We're seeing one this year, of course, with McVay and Goff, but there's too many other examples of that just not working. And so many times the real success stories are ones, the scenario that you brought up, where it's the new regime, the new management, that wherever they it's a late round pick, it's a first round pick or a free agent, they go find their guy and then start to implement their scheme with that player. So it's really tough sign for both these quarterbacks that were drafted in the same year, Mariota and Winston. A bit of a crossroads for both those QBs.
All right, let's talk about the New York Jets, which is something that I'm sure a lot of people haven't been saying here so far this season. But, you know, the Jets had been very competitive, and we've been talking about that throughout the season here. You know, they've just played well. They've been a big dog in some of their games, but they've been competitive more often than not. And then they hit a wall last week. Now, I know that Robbie Anderson was severely banged up, so the Broncos just completely took away Jermaine Kearse, and that took away the Jets' offense. And kudos to Denver for stepping up and you know, looking like the defense that we expected, and, of course, doing just enough on offense to get by. But the Jets now dropped to 5-8. They did go over their season win total a couple of weeks ago, so they have exceeded expectations here. What is it about the Jets that you wanted to focus on?
Oh, just a reminder that it's over. Life with Josh McCown is going to be bad. I really think that's why they were in games, because how well he was running the show. He was great at reading defenses. He understood all the protections. He got them checked to all these right plays, and just having that true kind of, I don't know what you call it, exclamation point to his career. And he's the example of my Chris Chandler theory. I've probably bored listeners with before, but Chris Chandler, no one remembers, he quarterbacked that Atlanta Falcons team that were the Dirty Birds to the Super Bowl. And that year, he said a quote that stuck with me. It's, I didn't really learn how to play quarterback until I turned 30. I didn't fully grasp all those nuances, subtleties of the positions, and, you know, just kind of how to run that team outside of spinning the ball and looking who's open. There's just so much to that position, and there's so few prodigies like Russell Wilson or a Dan Marino of lore. You know, there's just a lot of quarterbacks take years to catch up to that pro speed, the pro level, just processing information. Not everyone's a great multitasker in their early years, and I think McCown was the epitome of that kind of timeline. And even though he wasn't a great player, I'm looking at the drop-off between him and Petty, and boy, if the hack gets in there, we're really going to, I think, jump up against the Jets. I know this sounds stupid, but hey, I'm not claiming to be a sharp. I'm as square as they come at them. And, you know, if they're up against the Saints, I'm not even looking at a number. Give me Drew Brees, the Saints, and that machine up against Bryce Petty. Give me the Chargers if for playing for their lives in the postseason against Christian Hackenberg. I'm licking my chops. I'm smelling a series of beatdowns, record-breaking interceptions. I'm sorry, gangrene fans, but that you were really enjoying a nice little rental on Josh McCown, and I think things are about to get really ugly for the Jets.
No, I mean, that makes a lot of sense. And also, too, you know, as you get later into the year here with a guy like Josh McCown, who, you know, is 38 years old. I mean, and this isn't like Tom Brady. This isn't a guy like Drew Brees, who are just exceptions to the norm. I mean, a lot of guys, they hit 35 as quarterbacks, and they're mostly done. They're guys that hold a clipboard. They're assistant coaches. They're, you know, basically guys that are just there to mentor young players on the offensive side, whether it's wide receivers or quarterbacks or whatever else. You're asking a lot of Josh McCown 13 games into the season to throw the ball as much as he has, because the Jets don't have a great running game. So that is something I think, as you look at going forward here, you know, how much is left? How much mileage is left here with Josh McCown? I mean, Josh McCown's got 397 pass attempts. That's the most he's had in a season 2004, when he had 408 as a spry 25-year-old kid. So, yeah, the arm's getting a little bit tired. There's probably a little bit more maintenance going on during those practice days. So maybe he's not out there developing as much timing with the ones and stuff like that. It's just kind of hit a wall, and that happens. You know, I mean, there's nothing you can do about it. You know, Father Time is undefeated. So, you know, I mean, at some point, Tom Brady's going to run out of gas. At some point, Drew Brees is going to run out of gas. For Josh McCown, not really a big surprise that a guy who's been largely a part-time starter, you know, throws 400 passes, and all of a sudden it kind of starts to unravel for him. So I agree with you. I think the Jets, you know, are a tough team to look at here. Of course, they are getting 15 this week against New Orleans. So, you know, maybe that's a little bit too big of a number for some people out there. But, yeah, I think the McCown thing, it's a matter of workload, you know, and he's been he's also been overachieving. I mean, let's be completely honest in that regard as well. But I just don't think that there's a whole lot of tread left on the tires for this season. And who knows? Maybe he'll find a cushy backup job next year or something like that. But, you know, the Jets milked everything out of him that they could possibly want. And that's, you know, something that hopefully does benefit them for the future. Realizing the notes here, I accidentally skipped over the Green Bay Packers. So let's go ahead and talk about them. And full disclosure, I was doing Christmas shopping yesterday, so I didn't watch the latest Cleveland Browns debacle, but I was following along with it on my phone a little bit. They just find new ways to lose, new ways to not cover the spread. This time it was a 65-yard punt return that set the Packers up in great position to score. Brett Hundley polishes off that short drive, then takes the Packers down the field in overtime for six. The Packers are getting by right now, man, and it's very interesting here that, you know, they're one game out of a playoff spot with Aaron Rodgers coming back here sometime late in the season. At least that's everything that I've read. Mad props to Brett Hundley. Mad props to Mike McCarthy.
Yeah, and, you know, unfortunately, you said the key word there earlier, unravel. That's exactly what those Brownies did. And, you know, sure, the Packers, they've only beat the Bears, the Bucks, the Browns. I mean, they've gotten those three wins without Rodgers against some bad teams. But, yeah, if Rodgers gets cleared, this defense, you know, they can keep teams at bay. I mean, unfortunately, they're going to have to go up against Carolina and play a hot Panthers team right now. I was just watching Cam on that last play. There's just nobody built like Cam Newton, so that's a whole – manimal they're just going to have to take on next week. But ton of upside with some players that are just – Davante Adams is playing for some major dough next season. He's just going to get paid by somebody. And Aaron Jones playing well. Our guy, you know, a show favorite, I'll go out and say, Jamal Williams, really turning it on for him. So I think safeties, talented group, suspect corners, just a little pass rush outside of Clay Williams. So, yeah, this is another team. I think team speed I'm not sold on offense necessarily, but they get the wizard back, and he's medically cleared. I will have to remind people there's a plate and, what, 12 screws in his chest right now, and the doctor still has to give a green light here. But Aaron Rodgers is in. I'm betting chunks. With a qualifying mission of playoffs, just a chip on his shoulder, literally probably. So I just, yeah, that NFC picture too is so tempting for Green Bay. You're looking at the top two seeds are led by guys named Nick Foles and Case Keenum. That's a nice little setup for a Packers team that's still dangerous, and they definitely need some help. But you've got to love their motivation going forward. Yeah, this is a play-on team, I'd have to believe, for a lot of people.
One more thing we wanted to touch on here during this segment, and I was kind of surprised with the direction that you went with this, but we touched on it a little bit earlier here. One of the big stories coming out of NFL Sunday in Week 14 was the end of this Seattle-Jacksonville game. And obviously things got ugly on the field, and then things got ugly in the crowd as well. With people throwing bottles and drinks and food and everything else at the Seahawks players. But you know, it was an ending that, you know, marred what was a really good game of football. Very interesting first half with the teams playing that smash mouth defensive style with a 3-0 game going into the break. All of a sudden it ends 30-24, which nobody saw coming after halftime. But you know, you have an interesting stance on what happened there at the end of the game.
Well, I think the motion is definitely up because, you know, these two teams, they're kind of a mirror image of each other, except for a quarterback. But, yeah, this is a Jaguars team. They're pepping up. I don't blame them, but I'm setting them up for a fall. And I should start off, there's no excuse for what Seattle did at the end of the game, the way they acted. Going into the stands like Ron Artest, no respect for the Seahawks. Michael Bennett, I still think he's a stooge wearing kids' shoulder pads. But and Earl Thomas talking smack about Bortles, there's a lot of bad. And to be honest, there's a whole lot of people that the jerk store ran out of, I think, in this game completely. But I'm looking at a team that really, I didn't think they had any class. The fans as well as the team, I think the fans more so. But first off, Blake Bortles, talking smack. I mean, the only thing he should be proud of is a smoking hot wife. Outside of that, I still think this team is winning in spite of Blake. And basically, if you look at it, he played the game against the team he's been scrimmaging against, except there's backups at corner, backup at safety. Oh, there's also KJ Wright, who got knocked out in the third quarter with a concussion. Bobby Wagner, arguably one of the better linebackers in the game, left with a hamstring, just not two plays after that. So, yeah, Blake Bortles talking smack, Brandon Linder cussing these backups out on defense. Linder, you're a bum. Jalen Ramsey talking smack, that's one thing. Fair enough. Ramsey, he's a great player, but what kills me is these fans throwing beers, throwing anything at Seattle. There's just no place for that. And, you know, I'll admit, Seattle may not know how to handle losing, but the Jaguars, that whole crew doesn't know how to handle winning. And I just, that's a team, I hate to just admit this, but I'm kind of ready to see them face plant in the playoffs, because you ultimately know what's coming. I mean, the Blake Bortles, you can't hide him forever. And just because he had one good game against the defensive scheme that he knows a little bit about and scrimmage against for years with Gus Bradley. So, I'm not getting too high on the Jaguars, and I'm also seeing, I think, both sides of that game. Sure, Seattle, yes, that was a bad look. But also, Jaguars, get your act together.
Yeah, I mean, you know, everyone talks about acting like you've been there before and all that type of thing. And I'll say this, I mean, as I've gotten a little bit older here, I'm kind of at the point where I want to see teams show some swagger. I want to see teams show some personality. I love bat flips. If you don't want to get bat flipped on, don't throw a cock shot that somebody hits out of the ballpark. Well, for Jacksonville here, I mean, if they're trying to develop an identity, if they're trying to develop this sense of self-confidence and this swagger, good for them. Now, of course, there is a right way to do it and a wrong way to do it, but you know, they probably haven't necessarily gotten to that point yet. So, I mean, I don't necessarily take offense with it. I think from a Seattle standpoint, the Michael Bennett thing was largely the catalyst for this, and that's the big issue, and that this is a guy that, you know, has done some things like that before on the football field. So, you know, to me, I place a little bit more blame on Seattle for the whole thing. But, you know, hey, I mean, if you want to go up against the Patriots or the Steelers in the playoffs, you have to have that swagger. You have to have that self-confidence. Now, when Pittsburgh and New England slap it right off of you, that's a different story. But, I mean, for Jacksonville, you know, they are an underdog, and I think that they fully understand that and have embraced that, you know, going into the playoff picture here. So, you know, we'll see what happens. I mean, like you, I do think that they ultimately face plant here in the playoffs, and it may even be, you know, that first weekend, depending on who they run into there in that 3-6 game. But, you know, it was, again, it was a sad ending to a game that, you know, was a very interesting tale of two halves, but one of the better football games we've seen here of the 2017 season. Joe Everett from NFL Draft Bible. What's going on over at the Bible right now, man?
Well, daily scouting reports. I've got one out of one of my favorite underclassmen won't be eligible. You probably know him a little well, Victor Benjamin there, the receiver, just that unbelievable talent there. And then our Inside the War Room series, John Blair cranking those out every week. And Like I mentioned, the Senior Bowl, Shrine Game, NFLPA, all the All-Star Game trackers, we've got those. So want to know who you'll see, be hearing from in January, get to know that. And then also, this week we've got a College Bowl preview, draft-eligible players to watch for your bowl games.
Well, and you'll hear from Joe again here on our Friday edition of Bang the Book Radio, because I'm going to blackmail him into joining me again for the Super Contest segment after I went 4-1 again. But you can follow him on Twitter at Joe W. Everett. Joe, thank you so much for your time. We appreciate it. We'll talk to you again next week, man.
All right. Talk to you soon.
Great stuff there from Joe Everett of NFL Draft Bible. One more segment left here for this Monday edition of Bang the Book Radio. That is our college football first look / handicapping the hardwood hybrid with Kyle Hunter of huntersportspicks.com. How's it going today, man?
I'm doing well. How about yourself, Adam?
Doing well. Appreciate your time as always here, sir. Let's start on the college football side of things. I know we got a lot to get to from a college basketball standpoint, and we will certainly do that. But you know, now that we're on game week here, limits have gone up a little bit. Started to see a little bit of movement for these December 16th games. New Orleans Bowl, North Texas, and Troy. Troy up to 6.5, 7 now. Also saw some Cure Bowl action. Western Kentucky now 6.5 pretty much across the marketplace. Guess it's that time, man. I guess it's time to start looking for some line moves once again.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, we've talked about this in the past, that bowl season's a lot different than the regular, and that I don't get down on the openers near as much as I do in the regular season. So many changes happen. I like to wait for these line moves more often than I do during the season. You know, you don't want to take a side and then have a suspension, injury, you know, something that just absolutely makes you not want to hold that ticket. So, yeah, I'm watching these line moves, looking to see where the money's coming in quite a bit here.
So when will you fire? I mean, are you looking to play, you know, like it's a traditional Saturday, maybe get some stuff out Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday? Or how does your approach change? Because, I mean, you know, not all these games are on Saturdays, obviously. You know, where you'd have a regular college football Saturday with 60 or so games on it, you've got 5 on Saturday, 6 if you include the Celebration Bowl. 1 next Tuesday, 1 next Wednesday, 1 next Thursday, 2 Friday. You know, so, I mean, that kind of simulates Maction a little bit, I guess. But you don't have these big Saturday slates. So do you have a set time in mind when you're looking to dive in?
Yeah, I like to do it 48 hours before the game. I want to give people a chance to get on the play for sure. You know, I think it's kind of a bad look if you release the play an hour before the game or something like that. And at the same time, I don't want it to be a week or two before unless I really love the value. So, you know, usually 2 or 3 days before the game. And usually by then you can tell where the money's going. And, you know, at this point, I'm pretty good at predicting line moves and seeing which side's going to get the money. And, you know, usually the way it's been going there a couple of days before, it'll continue to go that way for those last couple of days. So I find myself usually playing it, you know, 2 or 3 days before the game.
All right, well, let's take a look at some of these here. I know you are going to take a deeper dive into them, so we'll just kind of look at some more general points of view on these games. Beginning with that Troy-North Texas game, as I mentioned here, the R&L Carriers New Orleans Bowl. Troy's a 6.5 or 7-point favorite in this one. Depending on where you look, there's actually a couple of sixes still sitting out there as well. You know, so this line's just basically hovering around a touchdown, and I think this is a very interesting game. You know, we had Alex Nicholas from the SB Nation blog Minor Rush on last week, and one of the things that he really liked in this matchup was Troy's physicality at the line of scrimmage, figuring that that was a little bit of an advantage that they had over North Texas. But North Texas, you know, the more dynamic offense, the more explosive offense. So what do you think about this one?
You know, I think North Texas, without their running back, Jeffrey Wilson, is a key. You know, to me, this is a game where North Texas is a little bit better on offense, 29th in yards per play. Troy is 34th, so not a big difference there. Troy plays a weaker schedule as far as the defenses they've gone against. So North Texas, I think, has the better offense, not by a lot. The other side, though, North Texas is 87th in yards per play allowed. Troy is 20th. You know, I think Troy's offense is a little bit of a disappointment this season. Troy's defense won them a lot of games. You know, I would have expected Troy's offense better numbers than they did in the Sun Belt this year. But Troy's defense was very good. You know, both of these teams are playing pretty quick. North Texas 45th in plays per minute on offense. Troy's 48th. Tempo should be quick here. My lean is the over. You know, my number on the side here was Troy minus 6.5. So I really think this is a good line. You know, I like Mason Fine. He's a very good quarterback there for North Texas. I don't know if North Texas can stop them. You know, North Texas has given up a ton of yards multiple times this year. I remember the Florida Atlantic games really well. Obviously, Troy doesn't have the same offense they do, but North Texas's defense has been really weak all season. That's what would worry me about their side. I don't see either team with a coaching edge or a motivation edge in this one.
Yeah, I don't know about the motivation edge. I mean, you know, Troy has a chance to go out there and win 11 games, which is obviously something that they're going to be very excited about. North Texas here, I mean, getting back to a bowl game for a second straight year is a very nice thing for them, especially because last year they did it, I believe, as one of those 5-7 teams. So, they haven't won a bowl game since 2013. So there is some motivation there for them here in this situation. Troy, as you mentioned, their defense very, very strong, 9-3 to the under here this year, which is why the total in the 60s kind of concerns me a little bit, because I think a track meet fits what North Texas wants to do. As you mentioned, both of these teams do like to go with some tempo, and you know, there's some tempo in the Sun Belt, but it's not efficient tempo at all. North Texas was a very efficient offensive team here this year. I know they don't have Jeffrey Wilson, but they've had a lot of time to prepare without him, you know, heading into this bowl game here. So I think the higher the total, the less I like Troy in this spot, because I think they want to keep this game close or keep this game lower scoring, whereas North Texas wants to get into, you know, one of those types of track meet games. And maybe that does give North Texas a little bit of a coaching edge with Seth Luttrell, with Graham Harrell. You know, those are guys that specialize in offense. So I don't know. I sort of feel like maybe my lean on this game would be the North Texas side here. My number was quite a bit lower than this one. So, you know, in that respect, from a power rating standpoint, I'd be looking at North Texas. But I don't know. Just it feels to me like, you know, you have a game here where you've got a Conference USA team that went to the championship game against the Sun Belt team that shared the Sun Belt Conference title for the regular season. And I just wonder if, you know, I know Troy's ceiling is beating LSU, and that's awesome. But over the course of the season, North Texas has played a better schedule.
Oh, yeah, certainly. You know, I will say that, you know, we can talk a little bit more about this than we do normally because there's been so many bets placed on it already. 85% of the bets have been on Troy, 90% of the money on Troy so far. You know, 85-15 when it comes to the bet count is pretty drastic at this point. So, you know, that's why the line's moving up as much as it is. And, you know, we're seeing 7. We'll see if we get to 7.5. You know, if it keeps coming in like that, we will. The over, 66% of the bets are on the over, 94% of the money on the over. I don't have a strong lean on the side. I do like the over some here.
All right, let's go to the Auto Nation Cure Bowl here between Georgia State and Western Kentucky. This is a really interesting game because you've got a Western Kentucky team that's down so much from last year. I mean, they missed Jeff Brohm very, very badly. Offensively, they've just completely fallen off. They had 5.4 yards per play this year, 2.2 yards per carry. And last year, this was a team that had 7.6 yards per play. You know, this is a Western Kentucky team that has really, really fallen off offensively. But Georgia State, I mean, yeah, they went 6-5, and kudos to them for that. Would have been 6-6 had they not had that game against Memphis postponed. But statistically, this is not an impressive football team.
Yeah, this is a Western Kentucky team that is way down from last year. Last in the nation in yards per carry. You know, like you said, Jeff Brohm, they miss him really badly. But at the same time, you know, you look at this game, and I've looked at this game a decent amount. Georgia State's not very good. You know, they're one of the worst teams in bowl season for sure. Western Kentucky has a big talent advantage. You know, if they can put things together, they can win this game by a solid amount. Western Kentucky's a hard team for me to figure out this year, though. You know, they're not terrible on defense. They're better than they were a couple years ago. Their passing game has a lot of potential. They showed it in a few games. They haven't showed it consistently. To me, you know, the talent edge here is so much that I just cannot take Georgia State. You know, I think Western Kentucky is my lean, even though my number does not show this as a value. I just think matchup-wise, you know, Georgia State's played a weak schedule. Western Kentucky's played definitely the tougher schedule. And like I say, I really just think there's a pretty big talent edge here.
Yeah, the talent edge is a big thing for me. And we talk about motivation all the time in these bowl games. And you can kind of wonder, you know, what Western Kentucky's motivation is. I mean, they went 6-6. They kind of backed their way into a bowl game a little bit after being so good last year. And again, they did lose a ton last year. Taywan Taylor and Nicholas Norris. They had 174 catches for over 3,000 yards last year and 31 touchdowns. So when you lose two guys like that, plus losing Jeff Braum, you know, you are going to fall off a little bit. But when you talk about motivation here, I think when you've got a senior quarterback like Mike White, a guy that transferred in from South Florida, you know, he's been the leader for this offense here over the last couple of seasons. And maybe the team isn't fully motivated. Maybe the team's not all that excited for this game here. But I think a guy like Mike White is. And I think that can be something that can, you know, push a team forward, can really help them once they get between the lines, because that's a guy who's playing his last college football game. That's a guy who wants to impress whatever scouts are in attendance to try and be an undrafted free agent, you know, make a practice squad somewhere. That's a guy that's got a lot on the line here in a game like this. Assuming that's the route that he wants to go with his life, you know, maybe he wants to go in the professional sector and whatever major he's got or whatever else. But, you know, I think that's a guy that really wants to go out there and play. And I was just writing up a preview for Virginia Navy today, a game that we'll talk about here in a couple weeks' time. But, you know, they got a senior quarterback in Kurt Benkert who's kind of in the same boat, a guy that needs to impress to be an undrafted free agent type of player. I think that's something that can feed through a team, and I think that is an angle, you know, that I do like to look at. I mean, the Hilltoppers still have a fairly decent defense without as efficient of an offense. You know, the defense did suffer a little bit as well. But I think when you've got that senior quarterback who's in his last game, who wants to prove something to try and latch on somewhere at the next level, I think that is a big motivating factor on an individual level that, you know, has a trickle-down effect to the rest of the team.
Yeah, I think so too. I think, you know, White's the best player in this game, and it wouldn't surprise me if he takes over this game and has a really big game here. So, you know, Western Kentucky's a team I don't trust a lot. I don't think I'll bet this game. My lean is Western Kentucky, and I will say, you know, you have to point out with Western Kentucky, as bad as their run game's been, you know, they might just avoid that run game altogether. They throw the ball about 50% of the time, which is almost as high as anybody in the country. I don't think Georgia State's played many passing offenses that are as good as Western Kentucky. So I think Western Kentucky's going to throw the ball around a lot here. I don't have a strong lean on the total. I think this is about right. But, you know, like I said, I think Georgia State's one of the weaker teams in the bowl season this year.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think that they're probably the lowest power-rated team that I have in a bowl game. It's either them or Akron, I think. Yeah, I mean, that makes a lot of sense to be looking at a Georgia State team that, you know, kudos to them for getting there, and kudos to Sean Elliott for getting this team there in his first season. This is actually the second bowl appearance in 3 years for Georgia State, which you wouldn't really think about. They played in this bowl game here, the Cure Bowl in 2015 as well. But, you know, for me, it's got to be Western Kentucky or nothing in that one. All right, let's go to the 3:30 time slot here. Las Vegas Bowl, Oregon and Boise State. This was an interesting one. This was one of the few really significant line movers that we had at the open, where Oregon opened 5, went up to 7.5. We didn't really see any buyback with Willie Taggart taking the job at Florida State. We didn't see any Boise State money come in. Oregon players really rallying behind Mario Cristobal. I figured that would be a good motivating factor for them. Now Cristobal's got the job, though. So now I've kind of backed off my Oregon stance a little bit.
Yeah, that's an interesting spot for them, certainly. You know, I think Taggart is a pretty good coach, but, you know, losing him is not like, you know, losing an elite coach. And like you said, I think they'd want to play hard for Cristobal, but now that he has the job, it's a little bit hard to figure out. You know, as far as the coaching spot here, though, I will say, I think you and I have talked about this before. You know, I'm not sure how good of a coach Brian Harsin is. I'm not saying he's a bad coach. You know, I'm not going to pick on him or anything, but he's certainly not what Boise State's had in the past. And I think this Boise team is decent. I think they're, you know, pretty good. They're good at stopping the run. They're still a little bit vulnerable through the air on defense. And the offense is far from what it's been in some years in the past. Obviously, Oregon's a different team with their starting quarterback. You know, that's a team that could have had a lot better season than they had if he hadn't been so long. You know, this is a hard game for me to handicap. I don't really want any part of this game as far as picking a side or even a total. I will say this one has way more bets placed on it than any other bet in any other game on Saturday. 55% of the bets are on Oregon, and 65% of the money is on Oregon. So some action there on Oregon, and we've seen that in the line move. 78% of the bets are on the over, and 79% of the money on the over. So this has been people's favorite game when it comes to betting so far. I think that makes a lot of sense, especially when you consider what bowl it is.
Now, something I need to go and update in my preview is that I expected that Willie Taggart would take Jim Leavitt with him, the Oregon defensive coordinator, who did an absolutely phenomenal job with this Oregon defense. They allowed 6.4 yards per play last year, 5.7 yards per carry, and a 64.8% completion percentage. This year, 5 yards per play, 3.6 yards per carry, 55.2% completion percentage. So they improved across the board. Leavitt is still there with Oregon. He's been tweeting about, you know, heading out to Las Vegas, which they're doing here today. So that's a huge boost for the Ducks in this spot. I took for granted, I expected that he would be going to Florida State with Taggart. Hasn't been the case. So I need to go and update my preview here immediately after the show. But that's a huge boost for the Ducks because this defense could have been lost without him. You know, they've made all these improvements, but once that DC leaves, you know, You're trusting what, the linebackers coach, the secondary coach, the defensive line coach, you know, whoever the next in line is for the defensive coordinator role, you're trusting those people to figure this thing out here on the fly against Boise State. Oregon doesn't have to worry about that. They still have their OC in Cristobal. They still have their DC in Jim Leavitt. So in looking at that, and of course, just doing this here, you know, in real time, looking at it here for the show, I like the Ducks in this spot. Then again, you know, they are 7.5. Number is above a touchdown, but I fully trust their defense now at this point, which was something that if Jim Leavitt was gone, I would not have been able to say.
Yeah, I don't blame you for that. I think Leavitt's a big deal, obviously. This Oregon defense is so much better than they were in the past, like you said. Big difference there. Boise State, you know, they're moving a class up here when they play against Oregon, so I think it makes sense that the line moves going the way it has. To me, this is an Oregon team that, you know, has a lot of potential. And like I said, they would add a lot of different seasons they had if it weren't for injuries. Boise State, I don't think their upside's near as high as it used to be. I think they'll try hard. I don't think they'll mail it in or anything. And I think both teams will be motivated for this game. But I certainly do think Oregon's the better team here.
All right, let's go to the New Mexico Bowl. And the last time Colorado State was in the New Mexico Bowl was an instance that we will never speak of again after this point, because that game against Washington State, one of the absolute worst beats. That's one of those that continues to be talked about to this day. And I don't think anyone will ever forget it that had action on that game or was following that game. So we'll see if this one plays out in the same manner. I certainly hope not, because this is a really interesting game here. You've got a Colorado State team playing in Albuquerque, which they are very, very used to in the altitude. You have a Marshall team that's not used to the altitude at all. So as we get into the breakdown of this game, Kyle, one thing I do want to do is give you mad props. You were all over this Marshall team coming into the season. They went 3-9 last year. I don't remember what their season win total was, but I know they went over at 7-5. They were 8-4 against the number. Kudos to you for being on the Thundering Herd here this year.
Yeah, I appreciate that. It was over 5, and it was my biggest season win total. Marshall, definitely a lot better than they were last year. I mean, you have to give them a lot of credit for being so much better. Having said that, you know, I've broken this game down quite a bit. I think this is my favorite side of the ones that we're going to talk about. I like Colorado State here. You know, Marshall is a very vanilla offense. You know, a lot of people are low on their offensive coordinator, and just they're very predictable on offense. Chase Litton has been a turnover machine here at the end of the season. Colorado State's offense is the best unit on the field here by a lot. I mean, they are a really good offense. Gallup is a tremendous receiver. Chris Jackson, the best defensive back for Marshall, is listed as questionable for undisclosed reasons. I'm not sure why that is. I think that's really key. So definitely we'll need to look into that one. Marshall's defense is good. They haven't really played too many good defenses, or good offenses, I should say. And Colorado State is a huge jump up in class when it comes to offenses that they're playing against. Colorado State's 14th in the nation in yards per play. I really think Colorado State can move the ball well here. Colorado State's defense is not very good either, but I'm not sure Marshall wants to get into a shootout with Colorado State. You know, the line move has already been fairly significant here. It hasn't been too bad. You know, Colorado State -5.5. I think Colorado State is a good play at that point. 72% of the bets are on Colorado State, 85% of the money. So maybe a little bit of sharp money there on Colorado State. I like Colorado State here, and like you said, they're used to playing here. I think that's a big deal as well, and obviously they're a lot closer to home.
Yeah, I like Colorado State a lot here in this spot. This is probably one of my favorite plays in the bowl season looking overall. The altitude is such a big factor. Albuquerque is over 5,000 feet above sea level, so this is significant elevation in New Mexico that Colorado State is very much accustomed to. Now, Marshall does have the luxury of getting into town early and practicing and, you know, doing all that type of stuff. But still, game conditions, the adrenaline, the energy that it takes, all of that type of thing, it's much, much different when you get between the lines. Also, I talked about it with Mike White, and I can use the same theory here with Nick Stevens. Nick Stevens probably won't be drafted. I mean, he may be a late seventh-round pick, something like that. He's certainly not going to go as high as Garrett Grayson did to the Saints. I think he was, what, a third or fourth-round pick a few years ago. But Stevens is one of those guys that can latch on in the NFL. He's got some arm talent. He's got good size at 6'3", 200 pounds. He probably doesn't get drafted, like I said, but he is one of those undrafted free agent types of guys. So it's certainly in his best interest here to look pretty good. Michael Gallup has made him look very good. He needs 6 catches to have 100 for the season. So he'll see plenty of activity here in this game. The one thing that concerns me about Colorado State is that in their games this year, they've only scored an average of 12.8 points per game in the second half and beyond. So this is a team that has had problems making halftime adjustments. If Marshall makes halftime adjustments, Colorado State may slow down in the second half. So I love them as a first half play. I like them a lot as a full game play. And again, Marshall's a team that I've been looking at throughout the season. I kind of picked them up the middle point of the year, looking at them saying, you know, this is a team that's really exceeding expectations. And that's pretty much what they were doing early on in the year because, as you mentioned, they did sag off late in the season. Litton threw some picks. Tyre Brady was injured for a little while. So this Marshall team doesn't really enter the bowl game on a high. And I know Colorado State had a disappointing season. You know, Phil Steele picked them to win their division and go to the Conference USA title game. But I just think that offensively, like you said, they're so good. Stevens has so much motivation. Gallup has so much motivation. I don't think that Marshall has answers for this team.
Yeah, I don't think so either. I think that that was a good point about Colorado State with the first and second half. I do like Colorado State there as a first half bet. I've watched several of Colorado State's games, and that's been something I've noticed is that, you know, backdoor covers have hurt if you're on Colorado State. I had them there when they played against New Mexico during the season, and they dominated that game and then just gave up a bunch there at the end of the game and almost lost the game for it. Colorado State does have a couple key injuries. Iggy Matthews running back, probably the biggest one. But, you know, to me, this Colorado State team is just a step up in class from Marshall. And I really think that, you know, that combined with the fact that Colorado State's accustomed to playing here, you have to like Colorado State.
All right, let's go to the Camellia Bowl, the last game here on Saturday. This one between Middle Tennessee State and Arkansas State. Fun little note about this game, that the coaches in the athletic departments are buying tickets to give them to the students here. For Middle Tennessee State, their last two bowl games in the Bahamas and in Hawaii, which is great for the players, but it's not particularly great for the students who wanted to go to the game. So they got a four-hour drive down I-65 to Montgomery. Arkansas State, they're also buying tickets for their program. 6 hours from Jonesboro to Montgomery. finals will be over. It'll be Christmas break. So maybe these two teams will be fairly well represented by the student fan bases, which will be awesome to see, because, you know, that is one thing that you lose with the experience of a bowl game here, especially these early bowls, is that you don't have large traveling parties of fans. So maybe we do get that here a little bit in this spot. But this is a really interesting game, Kyle. This is the type of game that you and I like to talk about. Middle Tennessee, obviously a much, much different team with Brent Stockstill. Arkansas State, pretty good team with Justice Hansen at quarterback. The Red Wolves are a 3.5-point favorite here.
Yeah, I like this game. I like this game quite a bit. I think it's the most interesting game of the day for me. I'll want to watch this game. Middle Tennessee State, like you said, a completely different team with Brent Stockstill healthy. Richie James is still out, so they're not what they could have been. But look at Middle Tennessee State. They've been absolutely crushed by injuries this year. I read an interesting stat about them. I jotted it down. Only four players from Middle Tennessee State on their entire team started every game this year. So they've really been hurt by injuries badly. I think Middle Tennessee State's a pretty good team that has really been hurt badly by those injuries. Arkansas State, fourth in the nation in tempo. They really like to move quickly. Middle Tennessee State's going to play fast as well when Stockstill's out there. So I think that's going to be a quick tempo game, up and down. Middle Tennessee State's defense has gotten a lot better against the run this year, significantly better than they were. They're still weak against the pass, though. Arkansas State's run game is one of the worst 15 in the country when you adjust it for their strength of schedule. You know, this is an Arkansas State team that's going to air it out. They can't run the ball here. I think they can throw the ball. I think Middle Tennessee State will probably be able to run the ball and throw the ball here. Arkansas State's in a bowl game for the seventh straight year. Middle Tennessee State hasn't won a bowl game since 2009. Both of these teams are motivated. I can't imagine there being a motivation edge in this one. I think I like Middle Tennessee State a little bit here. Arkansas State -1 was my line for this game. So I'm not sure I'll take Middle Tennessee State, but that's my lean.
I actually like Middle Tennessee State a fair amount here in this game, and having Stockstill back is a big deal. I mean, you look at the play under John Urzua, the backup, and it hasn't been good. He's thrown 16 touchdowns against 17 picks over the last 2 years. But what I really like about this game, and this is something that, you know, it's not necessarily a motivational, I guess it is by proxy a motivational angle. I love the coordinators for Middle Tennessee State. I thought Tony Franklin was a phenomenal hire as offensive coordinator. It's a shame that he hasn't really had a full deck of cards to work with over the last 2 years with Stockstill hurt. And then, of course, Richie James here hurt this year as well. But I think he's a very good offensive coordinator. And the hire of Scott Schaefer as the defensive coordinator is the reason why Middle Tennessee State is in a bowl game. That's why they were able to overcome all of those injuries. This is a defense that gave up 36 points per game last year, 4.5 yards per carry. Only gave up 3.5 yards per carry this year, 24.2 points per game, just 5 yards per play. Schaefer, of course, the former Syracuse head coach. I think that both of those guys have their respective units ready for this game. No knock on Blake Anderson. I think Blake Anderson, you know, is a very good head coach. I think that the fact that Arkansas State has had some stability here over the last four seasons is very, very important, because you look at what happened with them previously. 3 1-and-done coaches in Hugh Freeze, Gus Malzahn, and Brian Harsin from 2011 to 2013. But now they've got Anderson, a little bit more stability for them. That's something that certainly does help them. Interesting to note here that Middle Tennessee State's old offensive coordinator, Buster Faulkner, the offensive coordinator at Arkansas State. So there's some familiarity there for the Red Wolves as well. But I think the two coordinators for Middle Tennessee State are the difference here with so much extra time to prepare. I think they're going to have the Blue Raiders ready to go. I like them here catching 3.5. I like getting the hook, and I'd sprinkle on the money line as well.
Yeah, I like that point. I'll echo your sentiments on their coordinators. I think really, really good coordinators. Arkansas State, you know, obviously plays in the weaker league, and them laying points in this spot would worry me. I like Middle Tennessee State some. I might play this one. I have to look at this game more, but I agree with you. I think that Schaefer's done a tremendous job with the defense, and Franklin's a really good offensive coordinator, like you said. Bummer he hasn't had the full deck, because they could have really put up some big numbers, but I still think Middle Tennessee State's offense is going to be too much for Arkansas State here. I like +3.5 as well.
All right, let's transition over to the college basketball side of things here. And it was upset week in college basketball last week. Florida goes down to Loyola Chicago. Duke goes down to Boston College. Kansas goes down twice. So recap all this for us, man. What's going on with some of those big-name programs?
Yeah, you know, I don't know that there's any dominant team in college basketball this year. And we've kind of had that for a couple of the seasons here lately. For a while, we had some dominant teams. You know, Kentucky, Duke, teams like that. Duke's very good this year, but they've gotten off several times, and then they ended up losing their Saturday against Boston College. I don't know that there's any team that's not at least somewhat flawed this season. So I think that's a big story with it, and that there's more parity than there used to be, certainly. You know, to me, the surprising one there, I was surprised that Florida lost that game to Loyola Chicago. And I think Florida had kind of a little bit of a hangover from their neutral site tournaments there, where they got into some overtime games, played well there, and then lost that lead against Duke. And then we saw some hangover from that. I still think Florida's a good team with a good coach. So I think they'll be all right. You know, Kansas, though, Kansas was in a really good spot there against Arizona State. And they lost again. That one surprised me quite a bit as well. You know, Arizona State played on Friday night and then has to turn around and go to Kansas right away. And they win that game. I'm not sure who that says more about. You know, I think Arizona State's one of the most improved teams in the country. Kansas, I mean, they got a ton of talent. So, and, you know, Bill Self usually does a really good job with that team. So I assume they're going to be very good, but that one was certainly a big surprise as well.
So what does all this mean from a betting standpoint? I mean, does it feel like, you know, we're going to start to see perception of Kansas drop off, of Florida drop off, of Duke drop off, or are these just kind of, you know, one-off games that, I mean, when you think about it and sort of draw a parallel to college football, I mean, you know, we saw Iowa State win at Oklahoma, who's in the college football playoff, beat TCU, who played Oklahoma in the Big Ten or Big 12 championship game. You know, we saw Ohio State get blown out by Iowa. It just almost feels like in these major college revenue sports, you're just seeing more of this, it feels like. You know, and like you said, there's no true dominant team in college basketball. The talent gaps seem to be getting smaller, not just within conferences, like we talked about the Big Ten last week, how the bottom of the conference is starting to rise up a little bit, you know, but also from conference to conference. It seems like there's just a larger pool of talent to pick from, or maybe with the advance of social media and YouTube and all that, it's easier to find these recruits and these players. What does this mean anything in the betting landscape? Are we going to see, you know, value on these name brand teams?
You know, I don't think so. I don't think that too many people are really paying attention to college basketball right now. You know, most people are still focused on football, NFL, college football, bowl season, and then also NBA gets more attention than does college basketball this time of the year. College basketball, when everybody pays attention, is, you know, February and March. So right now, you know, I still think that people are going to be interested in taking Kansas, Duke, and so on. So I don't imagine that it's going to create much value there. What I do think, yeah, I think that, you know, social media has allowed some of these mid-majors and some of the lesser teams in the big conferences even to recruit better and recruit players that fit their system better. I mean, that's really important as well. Obviously, you have some of these teams that, you know, recruiting-wise, they're not going to rank very well, but then they seem to outperform every single year because that coach has done a really good job setting his system. I think that's a pretty common theme here right now in college basketball, is that there's a lot of coaches that do a good job of that. You know, betting-wise, you know, a couple other things I wanted to point out here. 474 unders, 473 overs on the year so far. I've been fortunate enough to do really well on total so far this year. I've picked my spots. I certainly have played a lot less games in college basketball than I normally would have at this point. But, you know, if it means being up as much as I have so far this year, then that's certainly good with me. You know, it's not one of those things where, you know, you can just continue to win at a certain rate, you know, throughout the course of the season. You know, I think my totals are 65, 70% somewhere there so far this year. And that's not going to keep going, obviously. But I think there is more value on totals early in the season than there is later in the season. I think that's why you see some of these massive line moves, you know, it's hard for me because, you know, I can put out a line and the total can move so many points that, you know, I have to say, you know, I have to pull that package and just say, you know, I'm not interested in this play anymore at that number. But, you know, I think that's going to happen less throughout the course of the season, you know, later on, because more people are going to be in that market and the odds makers will have better numbers as well. But I still think it's interesting that we have 474 unders, 473
over. Let me ask you this. I know you got a little bit of a late start to the college basketball season because you were sick and your kids were sick as well. But you said you haven't had as much volume as you've had in years past. And I kind of wonder about that. And, you know, I've talked about adaptations in the betting market here, and I'm going to write a big year-end piece on some of the revelations and things of that sort that I've had. But I do want to ask you about this here. You know, a lot of times it feels like somebody like you wants to play lots of small edges in hopes of accumulating bigger edges. You play a lot of high volume because you feel like college basketball is your best sport. Therefore, the more money you can spread around with those small edges, you certainly expect to have a good return on investment there. But with the inconsistency, with what we just talked about in terms of talent gaps narrowing both within conferences and from conference to conference, do you feel like maybe that more selective approach is a better way to go?
This is a hard one to answer. You know, I think it's still certainly possible to play a bunch of games and make money in college basketball. I think it's easier to do that in college basketball than it is in most sports. You know, I see some handicappers putting out a play for every single NFL game or something like that. That makes no sense to me at all. You know, I think that's a sales ploy more than anything else. College basketball, you could do that and still turn a good profit. It just takes a ton of work. I mean, it just takes a ton of work. College basketball takes me by far the most time of any sport I handicap, not even close. You know, so far this year in total, I'm 28-12, so 70%. No way I can keep that going. I hope I finish the season with a good percentage there on totals. But, you know, for me more than anything else, it's been just about, you know, thinking about clients. And knowing that, you know, when I have a ton of plays out there, it's so hard when you go through those slumps, you know. I can take it for myself. I don't like losing for other people. And I know that some people don't take it well, you know, when they go through those slumps. So I try not to release quite as many plays as I used to. I'll still be higher volume in college basketball than some other people, but way down from what I was there a few years ago. You know, I think it's really difficult both, you know, on my side, it's hard to spend that much time, you know, and when I want to write up every single game, you know, I don't want to give people a play without telling them why I like it. You know, if you're writing up 20 games on a Saturday or something, I mean, you're taking up your entire Saturday and not doing anything else. So from my perspective, that's one part of it as well. And then from a client perspective, it's really hard to bet that many games. And, you know, you have this random Saturday where you go 5-15 if you have 20 plays or something. And those are really difficult.
All right, one of the things that we've been doing here on these segments, we've been looking at a sell high team and a buy low team. You've got a couple of those listed here for this week. So what's the thought process behind these two?
Well, first I'm going to say Central Michigan, 6-0 ATS on the year. You know, they have a lot less firepower this season than they have in the past. One thing I would say about Central Michigan is I'd like to play unders with them. It's evident they've changed their tempo significantly from last year. They were trying to outscore people with, you know, up and down tempo last year. This year they can't do that, so they're playing a lot slower. I'd look for unders with them, but I also think there can be value going against them. They've played a really, really weak schedule so far this year. So I think Central Michigan is going to be a team that, especially come MAC conference play, will be a good team to go against.
What about your buy-low team for this week?
I like UC Irvine. I think they're going to be a good buy low. You know, they're always good in Big West play. That's a weak conference, really weak conference. They've been shaky so far, but I like that they've done bad against the spread so far this year because I think it's going to give us some really good value taking UC Irvine. This is still going to be one of the best teams in that conference, if not the best. They have some good young talent. They have a really good head coach. I think UC Irvine doing poorly here in the non-conference play is setting us up for some good value.
All right, well, we like to talk a lot about the Big West, and we like to talk about under-the-radar conferences. We'll have an under-the-radar game that we'll talk about here in a few minutes, but we've been going, trying to put in some conference by conference breakdowns here as we're going through these early segments, as we start looking ahead to conference play. Of course, last week we talked Big Ten with them already starting conference play. Talk about another big conference here, but that's the Big Sky. Now, this is one that, you know, we can see a lot of really good betting opportunities. Almost all these games are lined. A lot of these teams have been lined already, so we do have some evidence of their body of work thus far. What is it about the Big Sky that intrigues you this season, Kyle?
Well, first of all, you know, I love talking about these conferences. I really like talking about the Big Sky, the Big West, you know, conferences like that, SoCon, better than I do the bigger conferences. I think there's certainly more value there, both from a total standpoint and a size standpoint. So, you know, if you want to specialize, these are good conferences to do it in. The Big Sky has, you know, some really unique teams in that, you know, some of them want to play fast, some of them want to play slowly. We see a lot of pace wars here. I like that a lot. The other thing about this conference that I have to say, you know, just a brief overview of the conference here to start with, and then I'll go into the teams in depth. But this is a really scary conference to bet unders in. You know, if you look at the past few seasons, the over has hit about 60% of the time in the last 5 years in the Big Sky. So especially if you don't get that really high number, you know, if you have an over 165 or something, everything has to go right. But you lower that number a little bit, you can really get some high percentages on those overs. I don't think that'll continue to be the case that much. You know, the odds makers have to adjust there. But I will say, I don't like taking unders in the Big Sky. Almost nobody plays any defense. And usually the teams that want to play a little bit of defense are the ones that end up winning the Big Sky.
Yeah, that is something that I remember us talking about in previous years. You got teams like Weber State that, you know, will play some defense, Montana that will play some defense, and those generally tend to be, you know, the teams that we look at as the front runners here in this league. So is that the case for this season?
Well, you know, I think Weber State is a favorite here, as well as Idaho. You know, Idaho has had a lot of injury problems here in the last couple seasons. You got Victor Sanders and Theodore Calendre both healthy now. If they stay healthy, I think Idaho could certainly win it. You know, I would say Idaho just absolutely blew out Washington State there a few days ago. You know, Washington State was one of the teams that we sold high on there a couple weeks ago, and that was a good call. You know, I've had some bad calls on some of those so far as well, so I'll just be honest on both sides. But, you know, Washington State, you could see that one coming from a long ways away, that they were not as good as they looked, and I'm surprised they played as bad as they have since then, but it's nice to have one of those sell high ones completely fall apart there for a while. But, you know, Idaho's a team that does play some defense. They don't play as fast as most teams in this league. I certainly think that it makes sense for Idaho to be one of the league favorites. And Weber State, you know, Randy Ray is a good coach. And, you know, Breckott Chapman transferred here from Utah. His versatility is going to be really tough for Weber State. You know, this is a team that I really like that, you know, Blue Ribbon College Basketball Yearbook is something I read quite a bit of before the season. And the head coach there here said that, you know, he felt like his team has become a little bit of a dinosaur, you know, been behind when it comes to changing to more of a four-out offense, spacing the floor. He felt like that they had, you know, too many big guys kind of in the way on offense. And now they're going to stop doing that as much. They're going to be more of a four-out offense, space the floor. I think Chapman lets them do that a lot. It's nice to have those, you know, those wing players or the bigger guys that can step out a little bit. Weber has a really good starting five. You know, depth is going to be an issue for them. So we'll see how they look, you know, at the end of the season. If they stay healthy, they could win it this year. Injuries could be a problem because I don't think they have much of a bench at all. I'll go ahead and say a couple more teams here. You know, Portland State's a team that I'm really, really interested in watching here so far this year. They're a team that I liked before the season. I really wish I'd been playing them. They're 8-0 against the spread. I haven't trusted my work quite enough here on sides, but, you know, and then again, that's one of those things where you only have so much time in the day, and I've been focused so much on totals that I've tried not to play as many sides. But Portland State, this is a team that's playing very, very well. Barrett Peary, first-year coach here, has turned this team into a pressing full-court, you know, helter-skelter, try to make it as fast as we can. You know, when they're playing against a team that has poor ball handlers, they're going to eat them up. Against Loyola Marymount, they forced 33 turnovers. This is kind of a West Virginia-type team in the Big Sky. And I also was kind of looking at them here the other day, saw that they were way behind against Santa Clara. They started forcing turnovers in the second half, and then this is kind of mind-boggling. They made their last 16 shots from the floor, 16 straight, to win that game against Santa Clara. That type of thing's not going to happen consistently, obviously, but I think Portland State's going to be a team to watch because, you know, they play so much different than most of the teams in this league. They're going to press full court. They're going to trap all kinds of times. They're just going to be really aggressive on defense. They're going to have a lot of really high-scoring games. I imagine the odds makers are going to be on to that one. But any total that's not extremely high, I would like the Portland State over. So, you know, that's a team that I think is really interesting to want to watch. And it's important to remember when you're looking at specializing in a conference, one of the best teams to specialize on and keep an eye on is a team with a new coach. So this is one to watch here going forward.
Now, let me ask you about this, though. With a team like Portland State, because they've played so well, and they've done so against some fairly notable competition. I mean, they played right with Duke in an 18-point loss, played right with Butler losing by two. We'll see what they do here on Wednesday night against a pretty good Oregon team. Then they've got Cal coming up as well before they hit up Big Sky Conference play. Is some of the value gone on a team like that because they looked so good in the non-conference and then they head, you know, into games against more comparable competition?
Yes, definitely. I mean, like I said, I wish I'd been playing Portland State, and I kind of wish they hadn't covered all their spread at this point because, you know, if you go that kind of rate ATS, you're going to get, you know, less value on them in the long run. So, you know, maybe it's a team that you want to wait till they lose a couple straight against the spread before you start backing them, but this is a team that I think could be really good this year. I think they're kind of the dark horse in this conference. Will not surprise me at all if they win the Big Sky. You know, I like these teams that do things differently than everybody else. And so I think they have a first-year coach that's really on to something. You know, my notes on some of the other teams in this conference, Montana State, they have a star there in Tyler Hall in the backcourt. I've been reading on him a decent amount. NBA scouts really like him. They've said that, you know, this is the best player in this conference since Damian Lillard. I don't think anybody's saying he's as good as Damian Lillard, but Hall is really somebody that they like a lot. Montana State shoots a ton of threes. So this is a team that can be really frustrating, and that's something I want listeners to keep an eye on them with moving forward. You know, Montana State's a team that they could nail a ton of threes in multiple games in a row and just look tremendous, score 100 points on bad defenses, things like that. And they could go ice cold and be just awful. They're so reliant on the three-point shot. I don't really like backing teams like that. I think it's just too scary. Montana, you know, Montana is a team that has 9 players 6'5" or taller. A lot of length in the backcourt and on the wings. Solid depth for Montana. I think they're kind of the opposite of a Weber State. I'm not sure if Montana's starting five is really that amazing, but I think they have good depth. And Montana's going to play better defense than most teams. So we'll see how that works out for them this year. But I think they'll be at least, you know, middle of the conference or better. North Dakota is an interesting one because they had serious budget issues at the school. You know, this is a team that they didn't even know if their coach was coming back for a really long time. And a couple key players left in the offseason before he ended up signing another contract. And North Dakota eliminated several sports, you know, just major budget issues. They didn't know if they could keep the coach. They ended up keeping him. This team is definitely down from last year. They're very weak up front. I think North Dakota is a team that listeners will want to look to play against when they're going against strong front courts. I think this team's going to be overmatched when they play against good front courts. Southern Utah, some nice wins here in the early going. Todd Simon has his team pushing the pace at an extreme rate again. Southern Utah, you know, my main note on them is this team fouls at a ridiculously high rate every single year. Pretty amazing that you could, you know, foul as much as they do every single season. It's why the over has value with them. It's also why it worries me to back them, especially against teams that shoot the free throw as well, because Southern Utah is going to give up so many trips to the line. If somebody else is shooting the ball well from the line against them, they're going to score a lot of points there. So The next last one I had some notes on here, Sacramento State. Marcus Gray is out for the season. That really limits this team badly. They're really weak in the backcourt. They have an underrated home court advantage in a tiny gym. But this is a bad team. I think Sacramento State's going to lose quite a few games this year. They'll probably pull an upset or two at home, but in general, a team that I won't be looking to back very often.
One other note that I'll make here about this conference is that, you know, one of the things that we talk about is you generally worry about weather in outdoor sports like football and baseball, but weather can be a significant factor here in the Big Sky. I mean, think about the area of the country that you're talking about, Montana, North Dakota, Colorado, Idaho, you know, even some of the mountainous parts of Washington can get some bad weather, some bad snowstorms, things of that sort. So this is one of those conferences where travel can be a significant consideration. And you also have some places that just aren't particularly easy to get to. So that is one thing that you want to look at here for some of these road games. Again, we talk about finding beat writers on Twitter and all that type of thing. You can possibly find some really good situational angles here based on where these teams are playing their road games.
I agree for sure. You know, this is a conference where, you know, the travel can be a little bit tricky and, you know, you have some fairly long travel for several of these teams and not big budgets. So you certainly would want to look for things like that in an under the radar conference.
All right, a couple of games that we want to focus on here for this week, and you always have a rhyme and a reason for talking about these. How about College of Charleston taking on Rhode Island? This is a game here coming up on the 16th, so this one will be played on Saturday in Rhode Island. What are you looking at for this game?
Well, first of all, I wanted to try to pick out a couple games from during the week, or at least one from during the week. There's not much happening this week in college basketball. Exam week for many colleges, so definitely going to be a lighter slate than normal. This game, you know, I wanted to see how College of Charleston can play against a better team, a bigger name. CFC is going to be really good this year in their conference. You know, I think they're the best team in their conference, or at least have the highest upside of the team in their conference. But this is a nice test for them. You know, Rhode Island probably lays, you know, 9 or 10 points in this game. Can Charleston's defense do enough against one of the upper echelon teams? Because Charleston's very good on defense inside the conference. I want to see how they can do outside the conference. I know they've struggled a couple times already this year. Both of these teams are without their best player right now. Brantley for College of Charleston and E.C. Matthews for Rhode Island. We know Rhode Island's a good team. I think that's just a good test to see, you know, how good is College of Charleston. You know, I don't think I have a strong lean in this game. If I liked anything in this game, it'd probably be the under. It's more of a test for, you know, College of Charleston, how are they going to be moving forward. Like I said, I think Brantley's really a big loss for them, and obviously E.C. Matthews is a big loss for Rhode Island. I think Rhode Island can win this game by getting the ball inside and winning it in the front court, but, you know, I wouldn't want to lay the 9 or 10 points that I think this one will be at either.
I apologize to our listeners for this segment running a little bit long, but I do want to make sure I get this question out there. You said you think this number will be around 9 or 10. So as a rule of thumb, what do you need in order to play it? Do you need, you know, a full possession of line value? What are you kind of looking for as, you know, if this number comes out 12, do you play it 12 and a half, 13? What, you know, what kind of target number are you looking for?
Yeah, you know, I'd like to vary it based on how, you know, how much I like to play. Obviously, I don't have any set, you know, if it's 3 points off, I'm automatically going to play it or anything like that. This one is not one that is, you know, I circled and I want to talk about because I was sure I wanted to play it. Actually, the next one I'm more interested in than this one. But, you know, if this one were 4 or 5 points off, I'd want to play it for sure. You know, I don't think it'll be off by that much, so I don't imagine I'll be playing this game.
All right, the other game that you wanted to talk about here, Arizona takes on New Mexico, and Arizona's played a very, very grueling schedule here so far. A couple good wins for the Wildcats over Texas A&M and then Alabama. They take on New Mexico here on Saturday, a New Mexico team that's not what it once was. What is it about this game that's got you intrigued?
I like Arizona here. I think they can dominate this game. New Mexico is a unique team, a new coach this year that wants to play that up-and-down style, just frenetic. try to get their guard play to win some games. They have no size on the interior. They're going to be killed on the glass every single game. Arizona's always a good rebounding team. Arizona's going to be laying double digits here, but I still like Arizona. I think this is a really bad matchup for New Mexico. I don't think New Mexico is very good this year. I think they'll be able to hang around with some teams that don't have good front courts, but Arizona is so good and big in the front court. I really think they're going to dominate the glass in this one. New Mexico has a good home court advantage, but I don't think they have much else going for them in this game. And, you know, Arizona, the fact that they've lost some of these games early on, I think keeps them more motivated than they normally would be for a game like this. And obviously New Mexico has been pretty good at basketball here in the past few seasons. So this isn't one of those spots where you would expect Arizona to just not be motivated or not show up for the game. So I think this is one of those spots where Arizona can really put the pedal to the metal and win this one pretty big. You know, I worry a little bit about what the line will be here. You know, I'm going to say Arizona, you know, minus 13, somewhere in that range. I like Arizona. I think they can win this game by 20 points or more.
Kyle Hunter from huntersportspicks.com. What's going on over there at the website right now, man?
Well, certainly a busy time of the year, you know, football, basketball, hockey, everything going on at once. 28-9 last, 37 basketball plays, $479 for all basketball totals through postseason in both college basketball and the NBA. If you're interested in football, $199 for bowl totals, $279 for all bowl plays throughout the course of the bowl season. Kyle at huntersportspicks.com or at Kyle Hunter Picks on Twitter if you're interested in that. And also sign up for the free picks newsletter if you haven't already. 61-31 the last 92 free picks. Don't get me started on how yesterday's loss. It was a Green Bay team total under 21.5. So, you know, the Browns find ways of doing that. And I know Adam knows about that as well. So I won't keep this going any longer, but sign up for the free picks newsletter, and that's at huntersportspicks.com.
Kyle, always a pleasure, man. Thank you so much for joining me. We'll talk to you again next week.
All right. Thanks, man.
Once again, sorry to our listeners there for that longer segment. We had a lot of things to get to here, and especially with trying to hit two significant betting markets in the same segment with college football and college basketball, just happens to take a little bit of time. Coming up on our Tuesday edition of Bang the Book Radio, we're going to hear from some new guests this week here. Brian Blessing will join us. He's a fixture out there on Las Vegas radio, so we'll be able to chat with him. Probably going to talk some NHL with him, I think. We'll see what he wants to go over here for tomorrow's segment. Then we'll also be chatting on tomorrow's show with Dave Mason from Bet Online Sportsbook. We'll be talking with him about the bowl games, about some of the action that's come in so far, and then also maybe a little bit about Week 15 in the NFL. Then maybe one more guest, looking to get Ed Fang from the Power Rank on the show tomorrow as well. I need to reach out to him via email. So looks like we got a pretty interesting show coming your way tomorrow. Some new guests, some new voices. That should be a whole lot of fun. Wednesday, Brian Leonard and Wes Reynolds. Thursday, Brad Powers and Rolf Michaels. Friday, Super Contest segment. And Brent from DSI Sports with this week's version of the Odds Report. So lots of good stuff coming your way here this week on Bang the Book Radio. That'll do it for me. Thank you so much for listening, everybody, and I will talk to you again tomorrow.